Ladies and gentlemen, a week's gone by, a lot's gone on, which means it's time to tune in and listen to the ramblings of a diehard sports fan with Eli Gray.
We're back, we're live, and we're coming to you better than ever for the simple reason that baseball's back, baby. You know it. You know, almost a week into the season. Seems like it was just yesterday that we're counting down to the season, and now we've got spring training done with, and the season is underway. We're going to wrap up and give you my baseball preview for the week. For this year, and we will discuss, it's going to be a very baseball themed show tonight. We'll also touch on some of the goings on with the NCAA tournament and the controversy at Rice University, as well as the NBA playoff race, but baseball is going to be the highlight tonight. And the beauty of baseball is that it's not just day-to-day, each game is its own game. Each at-bat is its own at-bat. I just finished reading a very interesting book called Trading Bases by Joe Petta, a guy who figured out his own system on how to handicap the game using sabermetrics. But here's a very interesting thing that, and this is the way he put it, I really like, and it sums up the beauty of baseball, and that even if you are a fan of a team that's rebuilding, as my Marlins are, as a few other teams in the league are, there's still a lot to look forward to, a lot to pay attention to, and just the beauty of the game of baseball, and that the way he says it here is every team's season essentially comes down to 12,400 plate appearances, 6,200 battles between pitcher and hitter while in the field, and 6,200 while at bat. So each little at bat is a battle in and of itself. It's something to watch. It's fun for me to pay attention to how the hitter approaches it, how they're doing, watch young players, how they approach it. You get to watch phenomenal young players that really blossomed last year. That, you know, some came out of nowhere, some we knew were coming, but they impressed us even more so, a.k.a. Bryce Harper of the Nationals. You had Mike Trout coming out of nowhere. He was a prospect that no one assumed he would take the league by storm, as he has, and L.A. has added to their team by adding Josh Hamilton to that already stacked roster. But there's a little bit of a hint. I don't have him going in first place, and we'll discuss that later, why I think not. But the teams that are rebuilding, the teams that are looking to be a runaway, a.k.a. the Washington Nationals, should be a great team in a runaway, but the problem with them and why in other years they might have ran away with it, but this year the problem is the whole league is stacked. It's a very stacked league from top to bottom. There's 15 to 20 teams that legitimately will be in the playoff race come the end of the season and have a real shot at the World Series. We really have to lean on Washington as a lot of the pros have because of the pitching staff. But the season, like I said, it's already, we're off and running, and here's how we're going to do it tonight. I've got a few of the things. I really like ESPN ran their baseball preview the other week, and the way they did it was they used the Zips projection system, which gave you a minimum and a maximum number of projected wins or losses depending on how the team does and based on last year and the player's stats. So we're going to go through those numbers. I'll give you a feel of where I think they'll fall in within those wins and loss high and low numbers, as well as my thoughts on where they will fall, although I don't really like doing the predictions as far as actually where they will stand, because there is so much that goes on in a baseball season that there's no way to predict. Heck, even football and other sports, it's so hard to predict. And what you thought going into the season doesn't come up. You have teams that surprise you, like the Baltimore Orioles last year, who jumped into the playoff mix, even though they were still looking like a year or two away from being contenders because of the young players. But what was the key to the Orioles last year? It was one-run games. The one-run games, they won a lot of them. But as has been pointed out, you can't expect to win those like you did last year. And that's why they will slide a little in a very stacked AL East. And I'll give you an example of what I mean by the can't expect it. We'll go to hockey for a second. The Florida Panthers last year made it to the playoffs. They took the Jersey Devils to six games and took the great Marty Brodeur in goal to and made it really play. But the Panthers had to make the playoffs last year. They had a lot of overtime games that they got a point out of. And just like the Panthers last year manipulated that in a sense, the Orioles took advantage of the one-run games last year. In all likelihood, they will not duplicate it, and it's very hard for them to duplicate it, especially in a division that's very stacked. So let's start off with the NL East first, a great division. Top three teams are a toss-up, one way or the other, which way they will go, who knows, because you could potentially see Washington, Atlanta, or even Philly taking that division. Washington looks to be the clear-cut favorite, but not by much, because the Braves are, and the thing that I like about these two teams, as we'll give you, the Washington expected potential low end of the win column is 88 according to ESPN, and 98 at the high end. And with them, the thing is, will their pitching hold up? Will Strasburg be able to pitch a full year? They are very reliant on the pitching. They've got a great staff in Strasburg, Gonzalez, Zimmerman, Dan Heron added Ross Detweiler as a lefty. But will that pitching hold up? Most teams don't get a full year out of their starters. It's the rarity that you do. They're going to have to plug it at some point in all likelihood. Will that be able to hold up for them? The Atlanta Braves, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other between the Nationals and the Braves. I can see either one of them going one or two in the NL East, and one of them will get the wild card. And like I said, the problem for some of these teams that are really blossoming now is that there are so many other really, really good teams in the league, 15 to 20 from winning. The Phillies last year was, in all likelihood, an aberration. Will it be an aberration like we think, or will that actually be a predictor of where they're going? The Phillies have a solid staff coming back. They're getting some of their players back for a full season. And the Braves and Nationals, let me go back and discuss what I like about those two teams. And with that, we'll touch on the Marlins, who obviously will, in all likelihood, finish in last place in the NL by a large margin. And this is, once again, we'll discuss the trade on why I like what the Marlins did making the trade. We'll throw a caveat in there in a second. The Braves have done what the Nationals have also done, is the talent that is on their team, and it's tremendous, the amount of talent that they have, is homegrown for all purposes. Andrelton Simmons is homegrown. Jason Hayward, Freddie Freeman. McCann's been with that team for a long, long time. Reed Johnson, who they traded for last year, off the bench. But you've got the solid core of your team is homegrown talent. Your pitchers as well. Chris Medlin, Mike Minor, Julio Teheran, Craig Kimbrell. A very solid and deep pitching staff, homegrown. And this is, once again, the Nationals also. You have the same thing. Harper and Strasburg and Ryan Zimmerman, who they drafted years ago. Danny Espinosa, Bernardino. You have Denard Span. Now, granted, they've traded for a few more on their pitching staff. You have Drew Storen that they have, Tyler Clifford. They signed a big name in Rafael Soriano, Kayser, you know, to be the closer so they don't have a repeat of what happened in the playoffs last year. And this is, once again, Marlins, I'm going to go on as saying they will finish last, although I can see them going toe-to-toe with the Mets for last place. But the Marlins, it's clearly a rebuilding year. Jeffrey Warrior came out yesterday and said, in 2 years, we will thank you for making this trade. And I tend to agree with them. The prospects they've gotten back and the trades they made the last year will be the core of what the Marlins team is and what they hope will make them a contender for year to come, a la the Washington Nationals and Atlanta Braves like they did. The key for small market teams, and Miami, even if they would sell all the time, is a small market team, as are most teams in the league. The key is to build from within, to get prospects and to build from within and stack your team like that. And the Marlins went away from that last year. They signed all the big name free agents. They put together a stacked roster, and I was ecstatic about that as a Marlins fan. And would I have been upset if they did not make the trade? No. But I am not upset that they did make the trade. You stacked your minor league system with the outfield of Jake Marisnick in the minors and Christian Gaelic will be with Mike Stanton to be a stacked outfield. You've got Eddie Jacoveria at shortstop. You've got a few prospects at third base coming up. They are redoing what they did and rebuilding the minor league system, something that, as we'll touch on a little bit later, Yankees fans who will most likely finish second or last place, in second or last place or last place, wish the Yankees were able to do, but the Yankees had bad contracts. They were unable to unload, and they don't have a stacked farm system. So some teams really wish they were able to do what the Marlins are doing. Now, you think back to the Nationals years ago, they were a bad team. But the Marlins are trying to do what they all need to do when you're a bad team. You need to retool and rebuild. And I'll read you a quote from Dave Dombrowski in the book 2% that discussed the Tampa Bay Devils years ago and how they tried rebuilding. And this is Dave Dombrowski from a while back. If you're Baltimore, Tampa Bay, or Toronto, and this is a while back, like you said, because those teams are now in the mix, but if you're Baltimore, Tampa Bay, or Toronto, you know there's no sense in shortcutting what you're doing. If you're going to be good, you better build your foundation and take your time, because you're going to have to compete year in and year out. A lot of times what we all do is try to shortcut the process, speed it up, maybe continue building while trying to win. In that division, it's tough. I'm not sure what you could do. The same thing could be said for the Marlins and other small market teams that are trying to rebuild. You've got to build from the foundation. You've seen other teams like Baltimore does it, Tampa Bay does it consistently. Small market teams need to do that. They need to build from within. And while it's going to be a painful year in ways to watch the Marlins go through what they did, the Mets as well. Mets are also rebuilding. They've got prospects that they acquired in trades for R.A. Dickey, other prospects coming up. You have Matt Harvey, a phenomenal pitcher who pitched real well towards the end of last year, had a very, very good outing to start the year. So the Marlins and the Mets are now, even though they're in a bigger market, they've got the cash flow issues. So those teams are going to be rebuilding from within. And as I said, as a Marlins fan, it'll be rough in ways, but I'm looking forward to watching the young talent playing. That Jose Fernandez, the pitcher that was supposed to start the league in the minors, but due to injury is starting the majors, so you have some interesting things to watch out in the NL East. I'm going to stick with, and we'll go through the wins and loss column. Washington projected on a low of 88-98. I say they get 91-92 wins. They take first place by a small margin. Atlanta had the low of 85, high projection of 97. They probably also within a game or two of each other. And in all honesty, it's a flip between the two. Philly is projected as a potential low of 74-87. They're probably right in the middle of that with 82 wins, but probably not good enough to get them into the playoffs, even though in other years it might be. The Mets, 62 as the low, 72 as the high. I give them 67, 68 there. The Marlins a 60 as low, 74 as a high, the same as the Mets probably, 68 to 70 wins there, unless something spooky happens with the Mets or the Marlins or the prospects really do well and come up early and are given the chance. But that's and all I see in how the AL, the NL East shapes up, and I'm sure there's no interesting real news from my point, nothing different. You know, everyone's got essentially the same pick, but that's how I see the NL East shaping up. With that, we will take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000 calorie salad.
Acaramba.
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep-fried country bowl.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're done.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, Really Bad Dancer.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving farmers.
Whoa. This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
Alrighty, we are back, and we have our excellent producer with us, Roger. Roger, how you doing?
Hey, Eli. Thanks for asking me to be here. I'm doing well. I'm glad you're feeling better, though, buddy. I'm really glad. Haven't heard you in a while, but that's more to my fault than anything else. But, hey, baseball season, baby. Doesn't get much better than this.
Oh, thank God for baseball being back. Something to do every day and really watch and pay attention to. And it's going to be a fun season. It really is. 20
yeah,
or so
you know,
teams that are legitimately in the playoffs / World Series hunt going in.
Yeah, you know, Eli, I'm still not certain about this playoff stuff that they're doing, but I'm for it. Look, think about it. They've had four playoff spots in each division for several years now, and I guess they're going to have five now, right? That's going to, I mean, there's always one or two teams that just fail, and now it's just going to extend it, man. I can imagine what the playoff run is going to be like.
Oh, we noticed it a little bit at the end of last year, and it was just, crazy. And this year, with teams better going into the season, it's going to make it more tense and more. Those last 3 weeks of the season are going to be just roller coaster, hold on to the edge of your seats, watching the races. And an interesting point also in that this how tight it's going to be is that come trade deadline, there's going to be far fewer sellers, and the teams that really need pieces are going to have less to pick from.
I agree with that, dude. I agree with that 100%. I've noticed a lot of teams are locking up a lot of their players, which is really a strange thing because I've been watching baseball for a long time. So, yeah, Eli, I agree with you, dude. There's going to be fewer sellers and a lot more buyers. And I don't think there's going to be anything out there for them.
Yeah, and I know we said we're going to do the NL West, but let's say go parallel and go AL East. And let me throw this out there. If 5 years ago I had told you we would be discussing that the Red Sox and Yankees would be competing for last place this year, you would throw me in a loony bin, but that's seemingly legitimately what's going to happen this year.
Yeah, I am disappointed by it. I got to tell you, I don't think Toronto's going to be as good as everyone thinks, but I think the Yankees are going to be as bad as everyone thinks.
So
I don't know if they're going to be good.
Here's my thing also, and it might be a little bit because I was scorned last year with what the Marlins did. You know, I think the Blue Jays have the potential to be as good as everyone says they are, obviously. But like we've seen so many times before, till it actually shows up on the field, it's great to have it on paper. But there's a lot of things that could, you know, that need to be shown before we actually see and could say the, you know, Blue Jays are as good as they are. I think Tampa Bay takes the one spot in that division because Tampa Bay is essentially a known commodity of what you got. They added Yumel Escobar. They've added Loney at first. They've added some nice pieces. Their pitching staff is out of this world. I mean, it's just any one of those five could be a top two starter on any other team. They've got prospects out the wazoo that can get the call up. You know, I don't see a way that Tampa Bay falters. They've always been known to get the most out of pitching staff, minimal injuries. So I think even with the way the Blue Jays are stacked, the Tampa Bay Rays end up in first place.
Yeah, I agree. The Rays look damn good. I think Baltimore is going to be good. I like Buck Showalter. I like what the Blue Jays did. Don't get me wrong. You know, they're spending money, they're getting players. I think they're going to be competitive. But, Eli, I've heard people saying they're going to take the division. Wait a minute, man. That's not going to happen. They're not that good. But I do like the stuff they did. Don't get me wrong, Eli.
Yeah, I for sure. You know, would it shock me if they took the division? Absolutely not. But I think right now it's Tampa Bay's to lose. Tampa Bay's real good. The one concern I have with Baltimore, as I mentioned earlier and before, is that they won so many games by one run last year that you can't really count on that as much because in any given year, you're not going to get those bounces the way they have. That's an aberration for a lot of extent. So they have the talent to take themselves above that, but if they play the way they did last year, you're not going to win all those one-run games, and it's going to nullify it. But they have a very, very great roster with Roberts, Markakis, Adam Jones, Matt Waters, J.J. Hardy even, I mean, Manny Machado. But they have a solid roster with the pitching, but you can't play the way you did last year and expect the same results. They're really going to have to step it up if they want to be in the playoff hunt again this year.
Yeah, I agree. But it's going to be a good season, dude. The powers of E aren't exactly there. It's going to be good.
Let's just go before we take another quick break. We'll go with the AL East. ESPN had, like I said, they give you the bottom number of what they expect the team should win if everything, you know, or, you know, if things don't go exactly as expected, and then the top number of wins if things go as expected. Tampa Bay, they have it 83 at a minimum, 94 as a high. Like I said, I'm going to lean closer to the higher and give them around 90 wins. Toronto, 89 is a minimum, 98 is a high. I think they come in a little bit lower than that. 89, I would say, is right about the bottom, maybe even 85, somewhere around this. And you know what? Baltimore, who they had at 76 and 90, here's where I am not sure what to do. You've got Yankees also right around their 77 and 91. I think Baltimore has a better chance of finishing higher than the Yankees do, just because the Yankees are going to be bedeviled by age, and the age is going to kill them. I think they're going to hit that wall at some point. The Orioles, like I said, even though the one-run factors is going to play in and that you might not get all those wins, but I still think they do better than the Yankees and have a, you know, higher, closer to 81, 82 win range, whereas the Yankees will be on that lower range of 75 to 77. And Boston, oh my God, I don't know if they figure it out. There's a media circus there all the time. That team needs to turn around and continue focusing on baseball and not so much on the brand of the Red Sox. As I read about Francona, I don't know if you got a chance to read the Terry Francona book, but if you haven't, for all those out there, I would highly recommend it. It was a great behind-the-scenes look at the Red Sox. And Francona pointed out, and it was a big issue, was that the Red Sox went from being a baseball team to a brand. They were more concerned about the brand of Red Sox baseball, and that's essentially what led to the collapse and Francona's ouster, and why I think that the Red Sox will still be a bottom-of-the-battle team this year. So, with that, we have a caller on the line, Judah. Judah, are you there?
I'm there. Hey, Ellie. Love the show. First-time caller.
Awesome. Glad to have callers. How are you doing?
Listen, I just want to make a couple of comments. I couldn't agree with you more about what you said about the Orioles because, you know, listen, let's face it. They play in the AL East, and even though it may be, you know, a down year for the Yankees, but now maybe an up year for the Jays, and all those one-run, you know, games that they won, you know, they obviously, Mark Reynolds, one of their power hitters, one of their run producers, is now a member of the Cleveland Indians, so they're not going to have his bet in the lineup. And just to bank on those one-run games in and out, we saw that towards the end of September last year, that they just constantly, for, you know, who knows how they did it, but just managed to win those one-run games. But so I couldn't agree with what you said more about that.
Yeah, and like I said, if you listened earlier, you know, teams that have to rely on that constantly don't do it year in and year out. It's an aberration. You have the Florida Panthers in hockey, even though it's a different sport, similar example, where they made the playoffs just based on their, you know, overtime points that they got. And this year they struggled mightily because they weren't able to get that extra goal to go to overtime. And you see, you can't rely on the aberrations, essentially the flukes.
Also, I just wanted to make a couple comments on the National League East. Obviously, you know, I'm from Atlanta, been a member of Atlanta area for a long time. And, you know, I just, you know, all the national people out there, ESPN, you know, whatnot, Fox, everyone, Nationals this, Nationals that. Oh, yeah, the Phillies will be back. They're healthy. And I think, you know, the people out there are just forgetting about Atlanta. Atlanta obviously had a terrible collapse a couple of years ago. That was 2 years ago. But taking away that collapse, they're a 94-95-win team. Again, last year, they're a 94-win team. You know, they got victimized by that one-game playoff. They add Justin Upton. They add B.J. Upton. Those two guys in the outfield. Yes, you're going to say they lost Chipper Jones, but let's face it, he was on the downside of his career. It was more of just a nice farewell tour last year. Yeah, they did lose, you know, Michael Bourne in the outfield, but he wasn't too consistent. So now you put in the two Upton brothers, and you got Freddie Freeman and Jason Hayward another year, and Craig Kimbrell, he's almost automatic. So I just don't know why, you know, the national people out there aren't giving enough attention to Atlanta.
I agree. I think, you know, like I said, I can't honestly say that I favor the Nationals more so than I do the Braves. The Braves also have stacked starting pitching. Their bullpen is solid. They have the pop to put the offense on. The only concern I would have with them is whether the strikeout rate will be too high. I think Washington, their hitters up and down are more solid and consistent as far as that. They're not as reliant on the home run as the Braves will be. But, to say with any sort of conviction that the Nationals will definitely be better than the Braves or the Braves will definitely win out over the Nationals, I think is a fool's game.
Sure, that's true. You know, obviously the strikeouts will be up. And I actually went down to Turner Field last night. And, you know, the Braves, it was interesting.
You and the other 15 Braves fans, for all the flack that the Marlins get for low attendance, let me just say that Atlanta is right up there. I mean, I think, and I'm glad you brought this up, if you look at the pictures from teams and stadiums and baseball in this first week, granted, the first week, you know, it's hard to tell anything, but we had it at the end of last year as well. Baseball in general is in a lot of trouble with attendance because people aren't spending the money. The times of the games are a little ridiculous. No one's going out at 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock on work days. Even Sunday it's going to be hard to draw. So I think baseball in general with attendance is struggling. But the Braves, it was pathetic looking last night when you're looking at a picture of that crowd.
Well, it was pathetic, but then again, you have to understand that, you know, we're in Atlanta, and, you know, it's 35 degrees, it's rainy, it's windy, and, you know, a lot of guys don't want to go out.
I agree with you, but the problem is that when I would say the same thing about the Marlins, no one wants to go out in 120-degree weather and potential rain. Everyone says, oh, it's just because Miami fans suck. Well, now I'm putting it on you that Braves fans and Yankees fans who is empty and all the other people have the excuse of weather, but when it came to the Marlins, it's not. Now, I will agree with you. The Marlins is not a proof anything because they are generally a bandwagon fan, but baseball is very hard to say and make a comment about fans because it's hard and getting harder and harder each year.
Well, one second. Oh, yeah, I think I have to argue at that point. You're saying that, you know, the fans don't want to come out in 120-degree weather. Listen, if you had Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, and, you know, Josh Hamilton and just throwing Justin Upton, the fans would be out there in 120-degree weather. Problem is, the owner of the Marlins,
the team got the stadium
and said, now that I have my stadium, goodbye Jose Reyes, goodbye Mark Burley, goodbye Josh Johnson. I don't need you. I have my stadium. I don't think this is a weather factor over here.
What you say makes perfect sense, except for the fact that you're 150% wrong. Because look at last year when they went out and spent all that money. Go look at the crowds that showed up. And no one showing up, and that's when it was indoors. So
One second. You know, who did they spend their money on? Let's go through this for a second. They spent their money on Mark Burley. Mark Burley is washed up. They spent their money on a guy in Jose Reyes who had a nice contract here. What did he do before that? Inconsistent. They spent their money on Heath Bell, a closer. Since when do you bank on closers? They couldn't pull off a deal with Prince Fielder. They couldn't pull off a deal with Albert Pujols. Those are the types of guys that would bring fans to the stadium.
Not if you were in Miami, which I was before that, and listening to the way the fans spoke about the names that they brought in. Well, I agree with you, they were not great baseball moves, but according to a lot of quote-unquote pundits and stuff like that, even the fans themselves were ecstatic because these guys had great names. So it can't be both ways. You can't be upset at them for not bringing in, for bringing in these, you know, names and no one showing up and making that statement. But then on the other hand, when you trade them away, saying they're trading away all these great players, it can't be. You've got to have it one way or the other. It was bad baseball contracts that they made last year, but in the first year of stadiums, the fans didn't show up. And if you want to hang out for a little bit, we will continue this, but I need to take a quick commercial break.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minute chess.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score. with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000 calorie salad.
Ah, caramba.
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep-fried crunchy bowl.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving farmers.
Whoa. This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's sweet potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
Alrighty, we're back. We continue with our baseball preview for the 2013 season. Let's jump to what's going to be a very interesting race, and we'll shift off the AL West. We've got teams there, the Texas Rangers, the Los Angeles Angels, the Oakland Athletics. Any one of those three also could potentially be the number one team in that slot. Oakland, while projected on the lower end of the wind, I can see him squeaking by. Once again, this is what I've been harping on earlier. The league is so deep this year that teams could come not really out of the blue, but could shock us all by winning, even though we had other teams pegged. What's your take on the ALS, brother?
Hey, congratulations to the Mariners. They're not going to be in last place anymore, as we now have the Houston Astros in there. Look, I don't know about you, Eli, but as a fan over on the West Coast, I like it, I like it, I like it. These teams are spending money. Oakland, again, guys, they're doing it. They're getting a little bit of talent outside, and they're bringing these kids up. That they're hungry. They want to play ball, and the Athletics are going to be a dangerous team. The Angels, you know, on paper, Eli, we've been talking about that for some time now. The Angels look damn good offensively. They're pitching, you know, hey, I'll take it. The Rangers are weakened, but there's one thing I've learned, Eli. Don't count that freaking team out. The Rangers are still dangerous. Just because they lost South Hamilton doesn't mean it's over in Rangerville.
That's exactly it, and people are going to, you know, think I'm wrong here, but I have the Texas Rangers. I think they will get the first place finish in that division, barely, because the Angels are really good, but still, they added some names, but will that propel them? I mean, you have teams, people are projecting Oakland to be worse off, but let's not forget, Oakland won that division with 94 wins last year. The run scored was over 100. They had a 99 differential, and that translates into a lot of wins. I don't see them losing any major of that, you know, run differential. Granted, Los Angeles added, but their differential was 68 last year. Does adding Josh Hamilton give them that much of a bump? I don't think so. I think Texas takes first place in that. L.A. comes in second. Or, you know, even Oakland. I think Oakland and L.A. fight it out for second place. So that is what I think in the AL West. Obviously, Seattle, like you said, no longer in last place. But Seattle has some pieces also that they're building. You added Michael Morse to that team. They've got Kendrys Morales. You've got a young catcher in Jesus Montero, Justin Smoke at first, a prospect that maybe can turn it around. So they have what to build on also. And the Astros are just, I mean, they don't even have what to build on. They're just in the dumps with nothing, looking like they're going to come out. And as people pointed out, we know Yu Darvish in the second game of the season almost took him perfect, except for that last play, which was just a dagger almost. You know, it was not a solid hit in any way, shape, or form. Darvish missed it. The shortstop wasn't positioned correctly. But I think we can see a bunch of that going into, you know, as the season progresses, where the Texas Rangers will be flirting with getting no hits, you know, put up on them against opposing pitchers, perfect games. They are just that bad.
Yeah. You know, Eli, very quick, from the USA Today Sports Weekly, they're rating the Angels number 4 in power rank. Then they're rating the Rangers number 10, Oakland is 12, and then we have Seattle tied for 19 with the Red Sox, and then the Houston Astros on number 30. That's, you know, all 30 teams, that's where they're ranking. So I just want to throw that in there.
But here's the thing, which I don't get about that, and the thing is, you make these mistakes year in and year out. The main key is looking at the run differential over the last year. And like I mentioned, this book that I read, a very fascinating read also earlier, Trading Bases by Joe Pata, he came up with the system of, you know, figuring out the games and, you know, predicting them with a computer system based very heavily on sabermetrics, a unique ERA metric that doesn't include things like, you know, balls, but all those things that don't matter, wins and losses, he throws completely out. We all know that's not an indicator whatsoever on baseball. And he says here, given a league average on-base percentage of .325 and a slugging of .403 and ISO of .145, teams, based on those numbers over the past 10 years, I believe it was, is that teams are expected to score one run for every two hits they produce. So runs and those things, the major difference is the run differential is how you tell a team, and that's very heavily what he based it on. And if you look at last year, look at players that teams lost, these new power rankings that they're putting out don't jive with the actual runs for runs against based on last year and what the team lost. I don't see how you say a team like Texas that had a run differential of 101, plus 101. They scored 808 runs against 707 scored against them without any major. You had Josh Hamilton leaving, but that's 30 runs. I mean, you're not talking about that much of a difference. Whereas the Angels had a run differential, well, not bad, but not great either, of plus 68. That's middle of the pack. So, granted, they have the potential and the talent to trade it around, but you also not taking into account that Oakland also dropped, you know, also had a very high run differential as well as Texas. And Texas and Oakland, I think it's their division to lose, and the Angels are fighting from the bottom, even though they have all the sexy names and the talent that they went out and spent on.
Wow, Eli, I appreciate that. You know, I'm going to have to think about that for a little bit. I appreciate that commentary. There's no doubt you give it you do give it a good spin, Eli. I'm not sure if you're checking the switchboard, but we do have our caller again. I just want to let them know that we do know you're there, and that we'll get to you in a little bit. But, yeah, hey, Eli, good stuff. But that poll, it's just a poll, dude. That's all it is.
I know it's a poll, but these power rankings that you see them come out with, and they have teams that fluctuate up and down based on almost nothing, based on you know what's essentially a win, and baseball more so than you know than others. And if here's the, let's talk also. Let's switch quickly to the NL West because the Dodgers. Now that's a team that you can't throw more money around than they have. Even the Yankees in their heyday struggled. You know, I don't remember a team throwing that much money around that quickly with the roster, the contracts they picked up, from the Boston Red Sox last year for players that could very well be on the downside. I mean, Beck is a great pitcher, but he's reaching the age, the peak age of 27 to 29, when players tend to start dwindling, their skills go down. So, I mean, the Dodgers, to me, are going to be interesting to follow as well, just because of the money they put into that team and to see how they came come out and whether they could legitimately be in the playoff race. The Giants have. And I don't think we can put one thing and count the Giants out and say that the Dodgers come up.
Yeah, you know, Eli, I like that opinion. The Giants, it's tough to bet against them. They still have good, solid pitching, and they kept a lot of that team together. The Dodgers, oh, my God, it was an incredible amount of money they spent. But here's a funny thing, guys. I don't know if you noticed that, but it was one of the greatest salary dumps of all time. Boston got rid of those guys. But what did Boston do right after? It's like they paid off one loan with another. The minute they got all that stuff off the books, they spent it again. And I don't know about you, but what they spent it on, I don't know, Eli. I think it was worthless.
Yeah, and here's the thing that really concerns me about what the Dodgers did is that, like I said, and I saw it with the Marlins last year, you know, hopefully for baseball as a whole, that was a fluke. But when you put all these players together without having a solid core of, you know, homegrown talent, it's very dangerous to see, and they might not jive together because it's random pieces, even though a lot of those did play for the same team last year. But you're playing with fire. I like when teams bring up their own prospects, have a general core, and add players in a smart fashion that can help the team. Like, I like what the Braves did. The Braves, like I said, have a very solid core of homegrown talent, and you added the two Upton brothers. You're not going to, you know, they're relying on them in a sense, but you're still a solid team without those two players. That's going to be the interesting thing to follow, is how these teams that have just went out and bought their players respond, as opposed to teams that are out there that have a core of homegrown talent that have been playing together for years, and the Giants have that coming off of their success last year. So that's why I still think the Giants are number one in that division, with the Dodgers scraping by to make the playoffs and even be in the race.
I agree. I definitely agree.
So, I mean, and there's also yet another very interesting race, the NL Central. The NL has, from top to bottom in all the divisions, that the top two or three teams in those divisions can flip-flop and easily be the number one, two, and three in any given order, and that's something very rare to see in baseball. I mean, it's happened recently, but over time it hasn't been. It's essentially been the same teams winning the World Series, but that has changed in baseball, and it's fun stuff to watch. And so the NL Central, you've got Cincinnati, St. Louis as the tops, and then it drops down a little bit with Milwaukee, but they added Kyle Loesch, who could be a nice, you know, innings eater for them, a winner for them, so they could chip into the race. You've got Pittsburgh, who's been knocking at the door seemingly the past few years, but fails off. So you got Cincinnati, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh. You know, also, they could all be in the race. Chicago, obviously, will be in a rebuilding year like some other teams, and at the bottom. But I don't know. What do you think about the NL Central?
Well, you know, Pittsburgh, I like what Pittsburgh is doing. Look, it looks like they're finally getting around. I hope they at least cross 500 this year. Look, Kyle LaHose, you know what? I've never really been impressed by that guy. Never. But look, the National League Central, there's a lot to like in that team. It's going to be a dogfight, not the team, but the division. It's going to be a dogfight. I think the Cardinals are probably favored. I don't know if the Cubs are even going to be in it. No. I think the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Cubs are going to be fighting for that spot down there. But I would actually give the Pirates an end up. Milwaukee with Ricky Weeks, I think they have a good to a solid team. But right now, I would have to give it to the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, though, I like Cincinnati a little bit more. I think Cincinnati is a little bit in a less pressure situation.
Oh,
it's
yeah, that's right.
Between Cincinnati and St. Louis, so that's what I think for the NL Central. There's still a few more divisions that we have yet to cover, but I'm going to pull a good one. I'll give you a free go. We'll wait on those for next week. We'll take a quick break and discuss some of my other passions, the NBA and the playoff race that is taking place as we near the end of the season with just a little over 2 weeks left in the regular season. We will be right back to talk some NBA basketball.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000-calorie salad.
Ah, caramba!
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep-fried country bowl.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most. Idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Sultan of the Shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Carlson, my quiet sign on the road.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're gonna like it. Quiznos. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Toasty.
How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's Wrong Way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily. Wrong Way uses shingle-packed meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At Wrong Way. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven, is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... what the? For a limited time only at Quiznos.
As a matter of fact, we're back and live, ladies and gentlemen. Everything is good. As a matter of fact, my compatriot Eli is here.
He's right
ahead,
here.
Eli.
Sorry about that. We are back. We've got one last final segment here to go. We've been talking baseball all night. Gave our preview for a bunch of divisions. We'll continue that next week when we come back. But for now, let's shift over a little to the NBA. A lot going on. You know, obviously I'm a Heat fan, but there's a lot going on that happened with the team. The streak was broken against Chicago in what was a very headline, you know, the back and forth that happened. Some of the fouls were hard fouls, and then LeBron lowered his shoulder into Carlos Boozer as payback, got a flagrant, shifted the dynamics of the game a little. Miami lost that streak at 28. Obviously, we're now back on the different thing, and the team that's now on the hottest streak, the New York Knicks. They're playing very good basketball. They beat the Heat the other night. Obviously, it was without LeBron. without Wade and without Chalmers, but it was a good game. Carmelo Anthony was lights out, on fire, dropping 50 points against them. So they're catching fire at the right time. Miami's in glide mode. You know, their starters are resting up after having clinched the best record in the league for all purposes, even though theoretically San Antonio can get it. Miami has a tiebreaker with them with only a few games left. So New York, Indiana's in a virtual tie for second place in the East. It'll be interesting to see how that shapes up. The Lakers right now in the eighth seed in the West. Utah's right on their heels. Dallas is, for all purposes, mathematically eliminated. So it'll be interesting to watch Utah versus Lakers for that 8 and 9 seed. And like we mentioned the other week, the Eastern Conference has been locked up with Milwaukee, Boston, Atlanta, Chicago, Brooklyn, Indiana, New York, and Miami going to be the teams in the playoffs. The West has San Antonio, OKC, Denver, LA, Memphis, Golden State, and Houston. But there are some teams here that are nipping at each other. OKC is within a game of San Antonio. They can take the number one seed. New York and Indiana in the East, as I mentioned, are within a game or two of each other for the two slot. And the interesting thing is, and obviously, and here I pointed out some of the Knicks, you know, players, and they weren't that impressed with the Heat streak. And I wonder if they have a different tone and tune now that they're the ones on the streak. I'd venture to guess yes. But also, let's point out the thing that I love, and I love about who runs the team I root for, Pat Riley, with a huge, huge right hook to Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge called out LeBron for complaining about the fouls in a very unorthodox move, because executives for teams generally do not say anything about competing players. It's up to the players themselves and coaches. But Danny Ainge took a shot at LeBron, telling him to stop whining. And Pat Riley, in, as we call him in Miami, the Don, the head of our mafioso down there for the Heat, came right out at Danny Ainge and took a swing back, releasing a statement, not even saying it himself, but releasing a statement with the Heat media director, saying Danny Ainge should shut the up and just mind his own business, because he was a player that whined as he played, and I know because I coached against him. And obviously Danny Ainge went into little girl mode after that and had some comment that I won't even justify, because he's just bad news. You should have shut up in the first place. You took a bad stab at it, and Pat Riley in slick back hairstyle came right back at him and used language that is not usually used by executives. And the reason I love this is we all know LeBron's a free agent after next season. People are talking about him signing elsewhere, but I don't think he will this go around, because he's at the top of the world in a great city in Miami. The team is the hottest in the world. He's got consent, for, you know, he's got all the approval from management. While people say he might go back to Cleveland, let's not forget about how Cleveland spurned him. I think it's still too raw of a wound in ways. I don't see him going anywhere other than Miami, just because they've got everything in place there to make runs and be this great team for years to come. And Pat Riley is still running the team, and he's backing up his players in a very public fashion and has the talent and the resources to put together teams and great talent around LeBron and Wade and Bosch, even though they don't have the cap space. Like they've done in the past two seasons, they got UD back originally. They added Shane Battier last year. They added Ray Allen on a reduced contract. So that's why I love what Riley did, backing up LeBron, saying, we got your back. And it was really a move looking towards the future. But I think LeBron's comfortable there. The run this year is going to be great. Miami come playoff time is a completely different team. Knowing how they dominated teams, and not even dominated, but they, if you look at the final scores, they didn't win by that much. But when you watch the games, Miami didn't turn it on until the third quarter. Against Cleveland, they were down by 27. They turned it on, and that was it. 4 minutes left in the third, and they came back. That's the scariest thing that the NBA, I know, is peeing their pants about, is because Miami can turn it on what they want, and you watch this Miami team, who will turn it on from the beginning of the game, come playoff time. They're going to roll for the playoffs, so I'm not really worried about what the Knicks or any other team is doing to end up the year. That's our show for tonight. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another episode of Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan. Have a good night.